If the Bible were a novel, I would be suggesting to you that you skip a big chunk of the book of Judges and go straight to the book of Ruth. It seems that the compilers of our Christian Bible, the Christian canon, the books that go to make the sequence of the books that we have in our Bible, it seems they felt that we needed some light relief after some of the horror stories in the book of Judges. In the Hebrew Bible, the book of Ruth comes after the Psalms. That's a quiz night question. It reads like a novella about a woman whose life is turned upside down through tragedy and is eventually redeemed through the faithfulness of her daughter-in-law, a foreigner called Ruth. The God of the book of Ruth is not the hands-on God of the previous books or some of the books to come. He does not call these people to leadership or prophetic service. These are people like us, experiencing the ups and downs of life, and like us, struggling to connect with God, allowing Him to direct and shape their lives. This is a story that shows us what society would be like if we acted with respect and compassion towards each other, if we acted in accordance with God's will. In our reading, there is a glimmer of turnaround in Naomi's life. The last two Sundays, we heard how Naomi, with her husband and two sons, travel as economic migrants to the land of Moab, the lands east of the Dead Sea. This would not have been an easy choice. The two nations were bitter enemies. Her sons marry local women, and then disaster strikes. First her husband dies, and then both her sons. This community knows about bereavement. As we mourn for our good friend Beverly, and this afternoon we host our remembrance service when we hold up to God our loved ones who have died. So Naomi decides to return to her homeland and urges both her daughters-in-law to return to their families and remarry. One of them, Ruth, insists on following her to the land of Israel. They arrive and are destitute, relying on the kindness of the locals. At the time the story is set, Israel and Moab were sacking and burning each other's cities and slaughtering their populations. As a Moabite, Ruth would not automatically be a welcomed immigrant. She nevertheless is treated kindly by at least one local, the landowner Boaz. His workers, his servants, his foremen do not express any hostility towards her. The story of her faithfulness to Naomi seems to be working well for her. And so to the events of chapter 3. Naomi has a plan to ensure the restoration of hers and her daughter-in-law's fortune. Boaz, an immensely eligible bachelor, has noticed Ruth. Naomi's plan is for Ruth, washed and perfumed, to approach him while he was asleep. She has no clear idea what the outcome might be. Trust is a big factor in this story. Naomi's trust in how Boaz will behave, Ruth's trust in what Naomi is asking her to do. The act of lying at someone's feet is a common, very common, in the societies of the Middle East, even today. It's an act of submission, of throwing oneself at the mercy of someone in power. The Muslim practice of full prostration during prayers, borrowed from Christianity, incidentally, is such an act before God. The act of putting one's foot on the back or the neck of a prostrate person is to show that you have power over them. Many centuries later from our story, Alexander the Great surprised Persian nobles by refusing to follow the practice when he conquered their empire. That's the Greeks for you. And Ruth makes herself vulnerable at the feet of Boaz, and she asks him to cover her with his garment. Our cynical 21st century minds are screaming, oh yeah, at this point. It's a reasonable reaction, given what we know about the exploitation of the weak and the vulnerable by those who have power over them. Pietro Bartolo, the chief doctor of the Lampedusa hospital, describes how a huge number of female immigrants fished out of the sea alive have been raped on their long journey to the Mediterranean coast. Many have become pregnant as a result. Some are as young as 14. But Boaz is different. Caroline told us last week how different. He has already shown himself to be a decent man, a God-fearing man, a man who takes the law seriously. At a time of no social welfare, the responsibility for caring for the weak, the vulnerable, and the stranger is invested in the community and the individual. Boaz knows what his duty is under the law. And I, for one, am convinced that he does not exploit his position of power over this vulnerable woman. He's sensitive enough to send her off before it is possible for her actions to be known, at the same time ensuring that his intentions are clear. He will follow strictly the custom of consulting all that have an interest in Naomi's property and Ruth's future. In the middle of our Eucharistic prayer, the celebrant says this prayer, and listen for it later on. Lord of all life, help us to work together for the day when your kingdom comes and justice and mercy will be seen in all the earth. Up to the point of our reading, it seems to me, this kingdom of justice and mercy has come. Refugees are welcomed from the land of an enemy. Foreigners are accepted without resentment. God has provided abundant harvest. People are generous in their giving. The vulnerable are not exploited. Their dignity is respected. The community is involved in all important decisions. Whether this holds true to the end of the story will be revealed next week when Steve will be talking to us on the final chapter. As for us today, we have asked God to be just and merciful to us in our confession. It is only right to be just and merciful as individuals, as a nation, in our dealings with others. The kingdom of justice and mercy needs a collaborative effort to bring it about. God promises to be alongside us while we are striving to do this. When I was preparing the talk, I had the headlines of the Sunday papers alongside me, and I got to wondering how many of these headlines will no longer be news when this kingdom of justice and mercy comes about. Fear stalks final hours of Calais camp, but its children still smile. Drug dealers target homeless with spice, the spliff more terrifying than crack. Trump versus Clinton. We are afraid that ISIS might use our girls as shields and the army might shoot our boys. It is our duty as Christians to take these stories out of the news. I don't mean by not reporting them, but stopping them from happening. Refugees will be welcome. People will be housed in decent homes they can afford. Corrupt politicians and rich demagogues will not be seeking election to any office. And war and suffering will end. Working for God's kingdom of justice and mercy can feel overwhelming and the task enormous. Nothing is impossible. For God, nothing is impossible. A friend recently used this analogy to counter the sense of helplessness we can feel when confronted with all that is wrong in our world. She said that all the world's great rivers start with a single raindrop. And this community contributes a great number of these raindrops that fill to overflowing the ocean of God's justice and mercy. Among the many needs throughout the world, demands are made on us close to home. As a church, we have struggled for years to bring ministry to the estate on the Garnell Grove without success. We have put our name to the missionary efforts of some young people who feel called to move into the estate so that people there hear about this kingdom of justice and mercy. As well as spiritual support, there are practical needs we can help to meet. The Ealing Soup Kitchen has been running for 40 years, and the need today is as great as it ever was, but the volunteers are fewer than they've ever been. From next January, the St. David's team will be without a pianist to accompany their service of hymns of praise, which happens once a month. I'm conscious that I'm speaking to people who might feel overcommitted in what they already contribute in this place. We need to pray that the right people might come forward to strengthen this community's efforts to bring God's kingdom to Ealing. And if you are considering any of these yourselves, I am sure that Mark and Marcos and Zoe from the Grove, and Andrew and Jen from the Soup Kitchen, and Sally and Peter from the St. David's team would love to hear from you.